What's up? Another episode of Ripple Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Ricardo Renz, also known as Ricky Brands. We have a great episode for you today. We have returning guests, and this is a returning guest from almost as far back as you can go, from 2013. Jason Burmes, one of my first guests to ever come on. He was actually on Ripple Effect Podcast episode number 8 when I still had a co-host, Dave, who was one of my best friends and used to do a lot of shows with me. And then as the show grew, he's like, oh, you don't really need me anymore. So how about you just do your thing? And did make scheduling a little easier when you only have to schedule around two people's lives instead of three. But it was a great interview back then, and I really appreciated Jason coming on. And like I told Jason, all those initial guests, him, James Corbett, Daniele Bignelli, Douglas Ruskoff, Dan Carlin, so many early guests that were willing to come on, and I can't thank those guys enough, because I am sure them coming on is a big reason to why other guests after them came on and saw the show as a credible show and something worth taking time out of their day to participate in. So with that said, we talk about, obviously, how do we not talk about the Epstein thing? Obviously, we hit on that topic. We talk a lot about a little bit of everything. We talk about McGregor, believe it or not, maybe some stuff about him that you guys might not be familiar with, and a lot of different topics. So enjoy the show. Also, remember, if you want to support the show, Patreon page. If you are a Patreon supporter, then you knew this show was going to happen, because I let you guys know immediately when I book a guest. I let you guys know that, hey, this guest is booked, or me and this guest are in conversations discussing a time and day to do the episode. So you kind of have behind the scenes look into the scheduling and what's going on, and you know way in advance, where most podcasters really just release a show and that's when you know who the guest is. With the Ripple Effect Podcast, if you're a Patreon supporter, you can know months in advance if I book them that early. So I think that's pretty cool. And that's really the only way I can kind of give you a perk, because the other option is, of course, doing Patreon shows. And then I'd probably feel guilty not releasing them to everybody. And the real important part of the show is getting these conversations out there. So also remember to rate the show, tweet the show, share the show. That's all super important. The music you hear, you'll find links in the show description. The music is all Theory 6 music, which is my personal project, my solo project. And if you like the music, you can buy that anywhere, and all that money goes to also supporting the show. Obviously, the more support I have, the more time I can spend working on this. So a bunch of great shows lined up and guests booked. So be a Patreon supporter and find out who those guests are. And I think that's it for now. So enjoy the show. Sorry about the little bit of the hiatus. And hopefully there'll be many more to come very soon. Thanks, guys. What's up?
How we doing, brother?
Good.
Good.
You can hear me?
I can hear you. Hopefully my levels are also very good.
Yeah, everything sounds awesome.
It
was
very cool.
I was just actually checking. I'm like, when was the last time Jason was on? I'm like, I'm sure you don't remember, because it was a long, long time ago.
I feel it's like 6 years ago, right?
It was actually 2013. Yeah. That was, I think you were, it was you, James Corbett. It was a handful of really generous guests that, it was funny because I remember at the time I still had a co-host. He still host the show with me from time to time. We'll do solo episodes where we just kind of bullshit for a couple hours. But I remember telling them, I'm like, these guys are so nice, because literally they have no reason to come on this show. It's like our 5th episode or 10th episode, whatever it was. And I think you guys have always had a soft spot in my heart because of that, because I'm like, you didn't know if I was going to quit after a week or if I was going to continue, you know, 6 years later. So,
which is awesome. Shows you stick with it, man. Shows that if you put time into anything, it can flourish and blossom, you know?
Yeah. That was kind of the, you know, and I'm sure my listeners are probably sick of hearing me say this, but the podcast has become the perfect example of what I was trying to do, was, I guess, get the message across that we can all start our own ripple effect. And it was that I was kind of pushing that. I was a true believer when I started the podcast. I named it the Ripple Effect Podcast after a song I wrote. It was all about like this idea that we all can have an impact no matter how little. You never know how you know, where it can go and who it can influence. And even if, I mean, I've used the example that somebody like Martin Luther King or whoever that's super influential and everybody knows his name, but we don't know the names of the people who influenced him. And those people who maybe had really impactful conversations with him or maybe suggested a book that changed his life, those people aren't as well known. But they probably thought, like, I'm not going to do anything to change the world. But they end up impacting, influencing somebody who did. So we never know who we're connecting with and who is listening and how we affect the way they look at things. And this podcast is becoming kind of an example of that. And I think a lot of people in alternative media, because I think the beautiful thing about, like, people like yourself, James Corbett, Richard Grove. I mean, so many people in the alternative media and people I've become good friends with over the years. Like, you realize, like, we all have one thing in common. We're motivated by our work of, like, trying to get these conversations out there. We don't necessarily have an ideology we're pushing on people. It's more about, like, just get you to think differently. And you see it. You see it grow, and you see people like yourself and people like James and Richard really become well-known in the alternative media and get a huge following, because I think people realize you're sincere, you're passionate, you're not motivated by money. But really, when you think about all the great musicians, all the great, artists, inventors, they're motivated by their work. They're not motivated by money. So I think that tells you something.
I think you're dead on, and you never know who you're going to impact. And I also believe that not only when you put the work in, but you are a genuine person. You know, you're not trying to sell people. I don't know if I can curse on this show. I forget.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Yeah, you're not trying to sell people bullshit, right? I mean, especially with my solo channel, which I relaunched in mid-February, and really started grinding on by myself on a solo scale in the beginning of June, and it's grown so much. You know, I take people on walks with me, and I talk to them about not only issues, but about life and how I feel about things. And I think that's a key thing when so much of not only the mainstream, but the so-called alternative media is, again, pushing this narrative of left and right and bitter divisiveness and violence, really. I mean, everybody tried to cover yesterday's events in Portland, you know, over the weekend. And to me, although that was there, it's not like we weren't seeing violence back in 2008 when I covered the G20. You know, it was just framed very differently and it wasn't hyped up. And the fact of the matter is, 99% of us, when we go outside and we see our neighbors and we see our community, those political differences don't matter that much. We're worried about Tim and Tom and Jenny down the street and how they're doing and our friends and our family. And it's really the media pushing this narrative that we're so divided.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think when you meet people from different backgrounds, you meet people from different... I mean, I talk to so many people who I disagree with. Sometimes I try to get people to listen to the show, and they'll be, like, super conservative or whatever. And they're like, oh, you know, I could tell you're a liberal. And I'm like, I've had Roger Stone on the show. I've had Jack Abramoff on the show. I'm like, if you have something that's worth sharing, I'm like, I'll talk to you. When I had Jack Abramoff on, you know, we're talking about the issues with lobbying. I don't agree with him on a lot of stuff, and I feel like he was a big part of the problem. But if he's willing to come in, give people a behind the curtain look at how corrupt it can be and how easy it is to corrupt the system, then I think it's worth having the conversation. When Roger Stone was on years ago, you know, to talk about his JFK book, it was another interesting topic that I love just talking about, because it's I always tell people, I'm like, if they can shoot the president in the middle of the day, right in the head, a democratically elected president of the United States, what the hell can't happen? You know, so I think it's an important story to continue to keep telling. And really, there's a lot of young people who don't even realize that, like, the Zapruder film can just be watched on YouTube. I remember talking to my niece and talking to her about the JFK assassination. And I'm like, you know, you can watch it, right? You can watch the president get shot in the head and his brains go. She's like, no way. That's online? That's online. I'm like, yeah, it's online. And it's you know, there's younger generations who just aren't familiar with this stuff. So it is important to kind of continue talking about this stuff, because, you know, history does repeat. And what's that quote? If it doesn't repeat, it rhymes. it definitely reminds you that, like, oh, this isn't the first time this has happened. This has happened before, and I think it's much easier to get people to believe. That's where I think the Epstein thing really comes I think has become beneficial is because even the most skeptical people are starting to believe conspiracy theories or believe there could be something here. And it's so obvious that there's more to the story that even the people who usually use the term conspiracy theories to I guess, disarm a conversation or just, you know, lose all credit, they end up believing, like, yeah, there's something more here. There's more to the story. And if anything, if it opens up people's eyes, then I think it's a good thing that it finally made headline news and people are talking about it. Are you balls deep into the Epstein thing? I know you're constantly talking about it on your YouTube channel. Or do you feel like it's people are getting so obsessed with this story that there's actually, you know, there's more that we should be talking about and we're getting too obsessed with this one story?
Well, there's a lot to talk about there, right? So let's rewind to Jack Abramoff first. You know, a lot of people let's rewind to that because a lot of people don't remember. Abramoff actually went down. He was one of these sleazy lobbyists, Casino Jack. He was running all sorts of wacky operations off the coast of Florida on a like carnival type casino. Because people have to realize the intelligence community, the organized crime community, the lobbyist community, a lot of time the entertainment community, they're all embedded together. You know, these are the people that actually socialize. It's not like a weird thing that they just found 20 tons of cocaine on a ship that was owned by J.P. Morgan that was connected to Italian billionaires and it just got brushed away. You know, Jamie Dimon ain't going to prison. There are different levels to this game. And it's funny you mentioned Abramoff because before I kind of made my full-time comeback into alternative media, I was running a bar. And I had one of these guys that was, you know, graduating or whatever. And I'm, you know, I get a bunch of Long Islanders and New York and Queens, et cetera, kids. And this guy came back like a year and a half later and he's talking to me and we're going back and forth. And he's a lobbyist. And, you know, he got his gig through Abramoff because he took his daughter to the prom. He's showing me pictures. He's giving me his card. And, you know, it is kind of this like socializing or a worm-like club. So we have to look at that. Then you get to like this Epstein case. And, you know, is this a good thing that all of this is coming out? Now, on one level, yes, it is. But let's backdrop to what you just said about JFK. Not only do we still not know the truth about JFK, but we had a president who was going to fight the deep state. One of the reasons we put him in, he promised us we were going to get those documents. Not once, but twice. Now, I ask any common sense thinking MAGA supporter, et cetera, because if you look at my channel, I give Trump credit where credit is due. Great. Got us out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Love that. I'm, you know, getting away from the carbon taxes. Love that as well. Getting rid of the surcharge for not having overpriced insurance that does nothing. Love that. I'll continue to love that. Talking to North Korea, love that. But he twice could not expose the deep state that actually existed over 50 years ago. How much control is he going to have over it now? If you couldn't expose it then, that same network, and I think Whitney Webb of Mint Press has done an extraordinary job in a series. You know, I had her on for about 40 minutes a couple weeks ago now. And she broke it down. And, you know, Epstein, although only kind of frivolously connected to these networks, you see how the networks run. And just the fact that Vicky Ward came out and said, hey, Epstein's intelligence, then they find that passport, then Acosta holds his press conference, and he can't tell us whether or not he actually said that Epstein was intelligence. And to back off, he twice dodges the question. The next day, he's resigning next to the president's side. I mean, these are facts. So you have to look at that information. Then she comes out, and I thought it was really poetic because I had been talking about, prior to her saying this, how the Iran-Contra network worked. And I talked about Adnan Khashoggi. I actually put out an Adnan Khashoggi video, I think, 2 days before she revealed that Epstein may have worked for him in some way. For those that don't know who that is a Saudi billionaire who was doing the arms dealing involved in the Iran-Contra affair. Now, that affair is not as simple as people think. You see, he was getting the weapons from Poland and Czechoslovakia, okay, these Eastern European countries. He was then making deals with Mark Rich, who was the Israeli Mossad. So they were going through a proxy network of Israel down to South America to the Contras. And then, in return, the drugs would be smuggled up by the CIA into Florida and MENA, Arkansas, and Lord knows where else. Those are the confirmed locations. all the profiteering and money would be laundered through BCCI banking, and it was the same network that was paying off bin Laden and the Mujahideen while they were going up against the Russians. Okay, a lot of people went to jail then. That was a real big scandal. And for Epstein to not only have that passport, but then kind of reinvent himself in the mid-90s as a Trilateral Commission member till 2008, confirmed possibly 2011, shows you that this is a very, very real network. Now, to get into Epstein not once but twice, trying to and then allegedly committing suicide, right? This was our opportunity to, on this level, start exposing that same network and deep state and the most high-profile criminal we have ever had in our justice system, hands down, bar none, forget about it, most connections, most powerful, most money. We couldn't stop him from dying before the trial. What the fuck does that tell you about this country and the actual justice system that we live under? Wake the fuck up. This guy was invested in both sides of the game, connected to all sorts of nefarious shit beyond what we know about him molesting children and being a part of that network. So overall, it's great that this has gotten as much attention as it has, but it shows you the failure of this country and the many-tiered justice system that we have in the world.
Yeah, and the thing is, most of us have been talking about this guy forever. I had a friend of mine I ran into at basketball yesterday, and he's like, what do you think about the Epstein thing? And we're talking about the Epstein thing, and he's like, I remember you bringing him up like a year ago when he was doing actually something for schools on human trafficking. And I brought some videos that I sent him and articles brought up Epstein. And he's like, oh, and I recognize the name. I'm like, yeah, this wasn't a secret. I mean, everybody was talking about him. I was kind of, you know, this is kind of weird. I kind of want your opinion because we did a swap cast with James Corbett and Sam Tripoli not too long ago. And two guys that you know well. And we're talking about how I was a little confused why not that long ago we were all talking about Epstein. And it was, I mean, obviously, he was going to court. People were accusing him of stuff, and yet nobody was talking about him on mainstream media. And then all of a sudden, it's almost like they got the green light. And then I saw, you know, the morning shows, the Today Show, NBC. Literally, it was almost like, oh no, now it's cool to talk about him. We can bring up this case. Like, nothing changed besides like MSN just decided that it was okay to cover him, and I couldn't figure out the logic on why. I don't know if it was, I forgot what James said when we were talking about this. He to me it seemed kind of weird. It seemed like the story was completely kind of erased from any type of mainstream media, newspapers, TV shows, or morning shows, and then all of a sudden it was completely okay for everybody to talk about it. And I'm like, this just seems weird. Did you pick up on that, or do you think that there's anything there?
Well, here's what I think happened. I'm one of those people that says anything's possible, but what's probable? I think we finally kind of hit a critical mass, right? So let's really get a timeline of that explosion of coverage. Say back in like late 2017, we start to see more and more, and then the Miami Herald get involved, and then other people pick up on that Herald stuff. We hadn't seen kind of the barrage of that tabloidy stuff other than in Europe in 2010, 11, maybe 12 from the Daily Mail. You know, they were really at the forefront of buying Virginia Roberts Giuffre's story. And in these new 2,000 plus pages that have been revealed, you see a lot of that. Now, when we get to 2016, James Patterson, who is the best-selling novelist in this country, if not the world, he may be the worldwide number one bestseller of these novels that are, you know, like fictitious type Tom Clancy kind of thriller, et cetera, novels. But he decides, hey, I live in Palm Beach. This is the most bizarre case ever. I'm going to write a book with a few different investigators, and we're going to put this out. He puts out a book called Filthy Rich. I think it might have been in October of 2016. And I think it had at the time when I read it in 2017, a 3.5-star review. Nobody had talked about it. It seemed to be one of his least selling books. And I'm thinking to myself, this is great. How is this possible? Yet, well, all these stories that are coming out, 90% of them I've been covering and talking about it. Now, at the same time of that progression, you started to have the lawsuits finally go through. A judge said, enough of this. The Bradley Edwards lawsuit, which actually initially, and who's still representing a lot of these victims, by the way, He was sued by Epstein in the initial case for representing these women, and him and another lawyer were tried to be disbarred. So then he countersued after about a year of that, and we went almost 10 years before a trial date was even set. That trial date gets set, and then on the morning of, Epstein pulls out, the morning of them picking jurors, Epstein pulls out, pays him an undisclosed amount of money, and then you can see the statement that he writes, but he basically says, everything these lawyers did was up to snuff, I should have never done this. He doesn't outright admit to his crimes, but he admits that the lawyers never perjured themselves or did anything on behalf that they were saying that was nefarious. We have no idea what that sum was. Him and Jack Scarola, and you can watch this whole thing, it's like a 20-minute press conference, sit in front of tens, if not hundreds of thousands of documents in boxes. Now, in this latest indictment that, again, was a case only from 2002 to 2005 in one of his estates, maybe you could argue New Mexico and maybe Florida because they were in the documents, but as far as I know, those estates have never been raided on behalf of this latest indictment. And it took a damn long time for him to get down to the island, which was also named in this indictment. So you have the 2002 and 2005 stuff, and that's actually what they end up getting him on in this indictment, right? So you got to ask yourself, man, was it just everything building up to this point? He'd lost. He had to pay money. There were more cases coming in. The defamation. You had the Miami Herald suing. You know, you had big authors covering this. And then finally, enough people know what's going on through the alternative media who won't stop covering it like myself. I mean, you look at the 2017 to well before he was arrested coverage, you know, on my channel alone, when I was working for We Are Change, I covered it big time. And more people were. And I just think it got to the point that those, you know, bottom level, you know, good cops inside the NYPD, inside the FBI, the special agent in charge or whatever, you know, fifth, sixth, maybe seventh tier down are just like, fuck this, man. We're getting this guy. I don't think that man would have ever come in from overseas into Teterboro Airport in New Jersey if he thought he was getting cuffed, even with all that media coverage. I just can't buy into it. I don't believe it. If you look at even that Rusty Shackelford drone footage, there's a lot of evidence that they did after the arrest start moving stuff out of there, you know, when he put that up there, and not initially. But after the arrest, you start seeing computers missing. You start seeing some of the stuff inside of the temple missing, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's a lot of talk of him possibly filling up the alleged tunnels because he had a large cement mixer, like basically overnighted to the island, rush shipped there. He paid extra money for that. But when, you know, you say that your worth is over $560 million after being indicted on these crimes and the judge doesn't believe you, nor should he, you have every resource in the world financially. And if you're connected to intelligence, we know you're connected to globalism, CFR, trilateral, you're connected to like the upper echelons of just about every part of society, no doubt. So that's why this case is so, it's the post-truth world, man. You know, it's kind of ironic that 2 weeks prior to this really breaking down, maybe not even 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks maybe before the suicide breaking down, we had that FBI document, which is about 15 pages, about 8 relevant pages. I read it on my channel. That makes everybody that questions any of these events a domestic terrorist. I've been telling people that from the very beginning. After 9/11, after I figured that out, I said, you know, everybody here is going to be labeled a terrorist at one point for asking things. And now you can't question a new world order. You can't question Zionism. You can't question false flag events, et cetera, et cetera. They're all listed in there. I mean, what does a guy like me who's made Loose Change Final Cut and Fabled Enemies, one of the biggest false flag events to do, or Invisible Empire, A New World Order Defined, which really shows you the graduation of this globalism. Am I a domestic terrorist? I don't preach violence. I don't preach hate. I got nothing but love in my heart. I want us to come together against the real enemy, the predator class. And I hope this is an awakening to this. I really do. I hope that this event, at the very least, trickles into, you know what? Fuck MSNBC, fuck Fox News, CNN, and all their other little cohorts. I'm done listening.
Yeah, I think the part that just made it hard to believe, or why it seemed kind of weird, was because this guy is linked to so many people. And as you know, the media can be controlled. So it was kind of weird that, like, with all the high-ranked people behind the scenes that could have influence on what they're reporting or not reporting, that it almost seemed like there was a green light, like I said, because it seemed like they all start reporting on it at the same time. Now, I don't know if that's because, like you said, the story was getting so big that they knew they couldn't hide it. So maybe the, you know, just let them report it and like maybe control the way they report it. I don't know, but it seemed kind of weird because he is, like you said, he's linked to so many people. I mean, just the picture today that was on the Daily Mail and a couple other places with Prince Andrew's at his Manhattan house or apartment, and you know the picture of that. I mean, there's all these people implemented, and it's just like, well, all these people have pull. They all have friends. They all have influence. Why wouldn't they all be coming together, being like, no, whatever you do, get this guy? But like you said, I think maybe it's been building for so long that they knew that, you know, they couldn't keep a lid on it forever. And maybe this is the best option, because if we continue doing this, we'd continue talking about it. Where if they could take him out, you know, like they did, or whatever, let him hang himself or kill himself, whatever happened. If they knew that he'd die, then at least they can say, okay, people will forget about it. They'll move on to the next story. As long as this guy's still alive, it's probably more likely to continue the story. So that might be it too.
Well, I agree on that end. I mean, I think that they want this to fade away into the news. You know, I think at this point, they're kind of wishing for something, because a lot of people want to see more indictments, want to know why Ghislaine Maxwell isn't in jail. Some of these other people that now have been named in the lawsuits, like Tony Figueroa, Ronaldo Rizzo, you know, Sarah Kalin. I'll name the names because I want to know, why are they not arrested? Yeah. That also is a huge red flag in this situation. You know, I'll say this, to go back to the reporting on it, who really started digging deep? You know, other than the Miami Herald, I give props to the Daily Beast. The Daily Beast also really started digging deep, and I think it was the fact that it wasn't just one publication. You look at the Daily Beast, I'd say they're generally a pretty liberal, progressive outfit, you know, but at the very same time, they did some of the very best reporting and fair reporting via that. It wasn't all Trump bashing, like you saw when all this stuff started to come out. Yeah, they reported on it, but you know, I say that's another thing that the quote-unquote alt-fright got wrong, is they didn't get out in front of it. And I told them, I said, listen, there's a connection here that goes beyond what you guys want to talk about. And he was on that plane more than likely. And we know that Epstein rode his plane. I said all these things back 2-3 years ago, and I got a lot of flack about it. And I said, listen, he was rolling with this guy. That is undeniable. Yes, they had a falling out. And now that these pages have finally come out, it does look like the falling out was over Virginia Roberts Giuffre. Her father was that maintenance man who worked there. He has a signature, you know, a signed little letter as a valued employee from Donald Trump. I'm sure a lot of people got it there, but, you know, I'm sure he saw him all the time, small talk, yada, 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 found out that his, you know, 16-year-old daughter had been pimped out by him. And as the story goes, maybe that was the falling out. Now, we also have other reporting that said it was a bad finance deal, that it was in 2010, 2011, where Trump undercut him on a deal for a large piece of land. I mean, that's out there, too. We got a report on it. And Epstein didn't believe he actually had the money. He thinks that he had silent backers, and that's the only way he was able to do it, and he did turn a large profit. That could have been the falling out. We really don't know, but there doesn't seem to be any flight logs out yet. And by the way, we've only seen a portion of the flight logs from a portion of the actual vehicles used from one of the pilots. One. And there were several pilots. So there's so much out there. I'm certainly not going to let this story die. I think that people want to see more. They want to know whether or not Dershowitz is going to lose his defamation case, if any of these people are actually going to be named in criminal charges. The biggest name to me, at least in this country, that came out with that 2,000-page dump that hadn't been out there. You know, it also guts me to see these clowns and the alternative, hundreds of names, thousands of names. No, you fucking moron. Did you take 10 minutes to even scroll through to see what the names were? 90% of that stuff was already in the public arena. You know, the juicy stuff was Dubin, I think Glenn Dubin. The juicy stuff was George Mitchell. And the really juicy stuff was Bill Richardson to me, because this is a former governor. Well, Epstein has the Zorro Ranch. She names him as one of the assaulters, not just, oh, I saw Clinton here, or I saw Trump here on the plane, etc., which she says she didn't have sex with. This is a guy who's totally establishment, keynote speaker at the Bohemian Grove. Weird. Everybody says it's all Republican, but he's a Democrat. He's on the board at Genie Energy, close with Clinton. He's also the uncle of MMA fighter Carlos Condit, and he was ringside, or cageside, really, when he fought GSP for the title. So, you know, this is a guy that's still connected to this day, a guy they ran for president, I believe, in 2008. He wasn't that likable, but this is one of their puppets. And for him to now be an alleged child molester, and for that not to be, why isn't that front page news? Why aren't people at his door angry, wondering if he's going to talk about these allegations, wondering why he hasn't been arrested, et cetera, et cetera. Virginia Roberts has talked to the FBI for years, for years. We know Maria Farmer claims to have gone to the FBI in 2002. If you go to my Twitter page right now, we have a new model that says she went to law enforcement all the way back in 1997. There has to be records and documents of this stuff. So I ask again, why in the world are the co-conspirators not now being rounded up in this very, very real network?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The fallout thing is interesting because people are just using it for political, you know, debate. It's like, oh, if you want to prove that Trump is a good person, you say, oh, the fallout was because he knew he was a piece of shit and that's why they had the fallout. Or if you hate Trump, you say, you know, he knew all along. And I mean, I think it's hard to prove either or at the moment with the information we have. I know for sure Trump isn't a great person, and I know for sure there's quotes of him saying, you know, oh, Epstein's known for liking young, you know, the younger women. So if he says this publicly in a quote, obviously he kind of knows his tendencies or his likings. I mean, if he's been doing this for this long, and Trump and Epstein's have a lot of, you know, it seemed like they hang out or have a lot of similar connections, there's no way somebody hasn't once mentioned to him that, hey, this dude is doing this or his. And even if he knew, and there's a falling out because he knew, the fact that he didn't go to authorities is equally as bad. Like, the fact that he's like, oh, I know he's a rapist and he's, you know, doing human trafficking, but, you know, I'm going to stay away from this guy. It's like, no, you didn't go to the police, you didn't go to the authorities, you didn't go to, like, what does that say about Trump? Like, so to me, like, just even if he knew that Epstein was doing the things he was doing and that's why he wanted to stay away from him, to me, like, that's equally as bad as you know, as almost doing it, because you're letting it be done. So I think that's a huge issue among itself. The Carlos Condit thing sucks because I'm a huge fan of Carlos Condit, but that's right, because you're a huge MMA fan. I know you're one of the few people who are hitting on some of these McGregor stories.
I was like the first one in this country to report it. If you go back, I mean, go look. I mean, there were a couple other things out there on forums, and there was, I think, one YouTube video that beat me, but it was very crudely produced. But as far as a talking head or a pundit, I'm 100% the first person. Don't think I didn't contact the people I knew in the MMA media. I absolutely did. Everybody was hush-hush about it. And actually, I'm going to be launching a weekly broadcast with John Fitch, MMA legend, called Mixed Martial Mindset, in the coming week. So I'm pretty excited about that. We're going to do 30 minutes on MMA probably every Monday, and then 30 minutes on what's going on in the world. And we're going to rotate between my channel and his, kind of bring our audiences together. So I'm super excited about that. But yeah, no, I actually just brought that up. Oh, we got a vid that shows the culture, dude. That's what we live in. All right, let's just time frame that. This guy, allegedly, all the way back in December, I think it was December 11th in the morning or December 12th, of last year now, we're talking about 9 months ago, is with a group of people, some of which are allegedly Irish organized crime. We'll be real nice about it. In a hotel with a group of people that included men and women, after an alleged two-day coke and alcohol bender, when a woman who allegedly is his baby mama D's brother's best friend's longtime girlfriend. In other words, someone that would have been around him when she was in her teenage years, because she's only 20 years old. She also happens to have a baby with a longtime boyfriend. Okay, and she's out partying without him. I get it. But, you know, she's not alone in a bedroom with this guy. Let's say that. And allegedly, she gets kissed by him in front of everybody. She pushes him away and then is allegedly brutally beaten, raped, sodomized, and to the point where she is so banged up and scared because this happened in front of everybody, including the gangsters, she doesn't name anybody. Then McGregor allegedly turns himself in the next morning, and because no file charges were filed and he hadn't been named, they were like, what are you doing here? And he said it was consensual, by the way, allegedly. So then we have to wait until January, mid-January, for an arrest to even happen where he's released on his own recognizance. Okay, and you want to read the details, man. The WhatsApp messages where she had to have a tampon surgically removed from her cervix. It's brutal. This is, I mean, she was beaten up and she knew who was connected, scared to death. She didn't name this guy for weeks. She was so scared to death. Let's get that out of the way, because I had all these people saying, oh, she's a money grubbing whore and this and that. I'm like, I don't think you looked at all into these stories. And I'm bringing up the mainstream sports star that are, mainstream articles that are naming him as an unknown Irish sports star. And those details are as brutal, if not more brutal, than what I'm telling you right now. So after that, in January, nothing still comes out. That's when I get wind of it. A full month and a half after, I start breaking it. And in late January, a week after that, I think a week before February, nobody will touch it. Nobody wanted an ounce of touch in that. Okay. And I came in with everything. I know, I told people, look, in Ireland, number one, they can't out somebody's name, but a member of the huge European media network, RTE, was so disgusted that when McGregor actually turned himself in and was arrested for it, he took a picture of the facts of the brief that came in on the wire and released that in. They almost got fined for that, but no one wanted to make a bigger deal about it, so I don't think they ever did get fined for that. So when that came out, that's basically when I was ready to run my story. And a lot of people were all over me. I mean, you look at those initial like and dislike ratios, and it's like 50% are hating on me. And I'm like, I'm sticking to my guns. You got a sister, you got a kid, you got a mom. You should be ashamed of yourself. You care about any woman whatsoever. I mean, what happened is brutal. They're still trying to promote him now, but then especially trying to hype him up for a fight with Cerrone or some other bullshit. I was so enraged. So finally, the day that this is going to break in American media, so watered down that none of those details are in it, what I told you. By the way, 8% conviction rate in Ireland for sexual assault. If you think only 8% of the women there are telling the truth, I got another thing coming. So anyway, he retires that day. So all the fucking headlines are McGregor retires, McGregor retires. Later in the afternoon, it finally breaks what actually happens, kind of. And you got to search. You know, New York Times does a small story. And most of the media do the search engine. Like maybe you got 50,000 mentions or stories of the sexual assault in the United States during that time period, tops. And you've got 1.4 million on his alleged retirement. And that's what they focused in on, man. And, you know, Khabib, when, you know, he wanted to, you know, try to challenge him again, Khabib and his manager both brought that up. Media silence. We got a video of him punching an old man in a bar because he doesn't want to drink his fucking proper 12. This is the guy that's on your kid's video game cover for UFC 3. This is the guy that's in a purple suit over at the Super Bowl with his baby. He's a family man shaking hands with Robert Kraft. That's the illusion they sell you. That's the double standard in this Me Too, Them Too, Time's Up facade of a society. How many of those celebrities are arm in arm with McGregor in a selfie or on video? Give me a break, man. So we got a lot to change. You know, we got to start being honest with ourselves. We got to look in the mirror and say, why aren't we demanding? Why is this guy in the country? I mean, aside from just punching old men in a bar, why are we allowing, you know, he shouldn't be in the country. He literally assaulted people on a bus at MSG where somebody lost part of their sight. You know, Ray Berg got glass in his eye and we're letting him back in. I'll tell you why we're letting him back in. Ari Emanuel is a very, very powerful man. He is a big owner in the UFC. Dana White, now a very, very powerful man. Okay. So powerful, in fact, that pre-WME buying out the UFC, the Saudis were heavily invested. They leveraged the Khashoggi scandal to give them back their initial investment money, which was nowhere near what it would have been worth now, just to take that back. That's how powerful Emanuel and WME Entertainment are. And let's be honest, he's a huge draw. He means hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars to people. So that's how reality really works. So it's really a microcosm in the same situation that we're in. We are in a place where the reality we are presented, unfortunately, I would say 90% of the time, is nothing but a mere facade.
Yeah, the McGregor thing is interesting because nobody wants to believe that, you know, their heroes or somebody they look up to is a piece of shit. And it's, believe me, when McGregor was up and coming, I was a huge fan, and the way he was actually doing what he said he was going to do was amazing. And He won first UFC fighter to win two belts and all that stuff. But it doesn't mean he's a good person. It doesn't mean he has a good moral compass. It doesn't mean any of that stuff. And never mind it. It doesn't necessarily mean he was always like that either. It could mean that money, power, fame, all that stuff could go to his head. I mean, I don't have any evidence that he was always a shithead. But it's quite obvious by his actions now that he's completely lost his fucking mind. I mean, he's just constantly in the news for stupid stuff. And don't get me wrong. I mean, there's people. The idea of having that much fame where every action you do or you're a part of gets headline news. I mean, you see with the Rogan podcast where, like, he'll mention anything and it's like there'll be an article the next day. Rogan said this. You know, Rogan said that. And it's like they'll just blow everything out of proportion because he's so popular. Same, you know, I can understand it's hard to deal with that type of fame. But, people too do it. I mean, I'm Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm a huge fan of Cristiano Ronaldo. The dude's one of the most famous people in the world. Never in the news for the wrong reason. I mean, there's plenty of other examples of people like that. One thing that was interesting when him and Khabib fought, and it's funny you bring up Saudi Arabia because
is there Ronaldo in the news though for an alleged rape?
Yeah, he is. But again,
I don't know much about it.
Yeah, well, I think it was dropped, and Messi was also in the news for alleged rape. I mean, you know, Kobe Bryant. I mean, it is one of those things where. I kind of stay away from
that. That's a he said, she said thing. Even with the Tyson stuff,
yeah.
I know the conviction. This incident, I want to make everybody real damn clear. This is not a he said, she said thing. This is CCTV camera footage. This is a cleaned up hotel.
I think this is a selfie, right, of them together, too.
I haven't seen. That's a different woman. The selfie you're talking about.
I'm losing track.
He has another kid. You know, he has a model girl who's blowing him up on Instagram. I mean, listen, I'm not here to talk about anybody and how shitty of a person they are, because clearly he is a fucking shitty person. But when you harm another person like that, when you take that away from person, that's never going to – I can't imagine being physically, sexually assaulted by anybody or anything. And, you know, that's one of those things where – when I look at this, you know, corrupt MCC Epstein situation, after the first time, I said, look, man, there's a lot of people in there with daughters. We know this place is corrupt. They put them in there with Anthony Tartaglione, or Nicholas Tartaglione, who was a alleged quadruple murderer, roidhead, who was caught up in a bad coke deal, who also got in an assault a year ago in the same wing of the prison, who somehow weeks before Epstein gets there, smuggles in a miniature cell phone that can make calls and text. All of this is just the most bizarre thing in the world. Then this happens. So it's not above me to say, you know, first of all, he had a cellmate. They tried to put him in Gen Pop, and there's no cameras or anything. There's a good possibility that a 66-year-old man got run on in prison. You know, they let him go into a wing where there wasn't any kind of cameras. Some of the boys got in there, and the guards let him have at him. And maybe they only just held him down by his neck or whatever and sodomized them. Maybe that's not how he wanted to live and say, hey, we're going to give you another opportunity in a couple weeks. Or maybe he paid. I don't know what happened there. We got to leave everything on the table. And I don't know, man. I don't know how much raping I could stand up to before I'd want to take my own life. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm Shawshank Redemption holding on.
Yeah. No, I hear you. The thing, too, that's really interesting talking about McGregor is when he was fighting Khabib, calling Khabib's manager, Ali, a terrorist, he has some really interesting links, too. If you look at, I think it was Bloody Elbow or some other places that wrote, I mean, there's not a whole lot of places that wrote articles about him and his link to some terrorist group and possibly the CIA and all this other stuff. Do you know?
Oh, yeah. That's how it works, dude. Oh, no, I've read those. Yeah, he was connected to the, you know, the 9/11 terror networks. And again, who wasn't connected? The Pakistani ISI sure was. They wired out $100,000 just before the attacks. You know, we've been best buddies with Pakistan forever. Nobody mentions them on the war on terror. That's a microcosm for what was going on. When I tell people that, I'm like, that's why Khalid Al-Madar was renting from and living with an FBI informant. And, you know, with that Dark Overlord data dump, we've only gotten 3 out of the 5 encryptions. But I think it was either layer 2 or layer 3. We finally got the secret testimony of James Woods, the actor, who in August, just before these attacks, pointed out Khalid Al-Madar and another hijacker for sure, and 2 others that got on this plane with the pilot and with a stewardess that made reports. So you're telling me the guy who ends up being a 9/11 terrorist who lives with and rents from an FBI informant and who had a report that he was going to hijack a plane only 2 months before, allegedly on Flight 11, the same exact plane that got hijacked. But I don't believe he was on. I think Almodar ends up being on 77, which makes it even more suspicious, right? Yeah, Diane Albrighton call the CIA on Waleed al-Shaari. So, yeah, man, of course he had connections. He's probably somebody who came over, was in the network from the 70s and 80s, the Mujahideen, the Islamic Brotherhood, had worked with some of these spooks, comes over, loves America, he's an informant too, he runs some jobs with these guys, and then he's connected, some of it comes out, and they got to deport him, you know, for optics. That's why he's not in prison. There's a lot of optics in these situations. Look at the Israeli network prior to 9/11. People don't understand it wasn't just the Dancing Israelis or Amdocs and Converse. They had arrested 70-plus people before 9/11. They round up these other five on 9/11. Then they round up more of them afterwards. They just never talk about 144 of them get deported. No charges. So that's one of these reasons that I think exposing the Epstein network is important, because it's the same damn network when you get to the bottom of it. All right, it's the octopus that Danny Casolaro was trying to expose in the 80s. This is not a new thing. And I hope that finally people can awaken to this and that this is what the deep state is. You know, I'm glad that deep state is now just a common term. It's not. I'm upset that some of them think it's clown show, because it certainly isn't. You know, it was coined by a guy named Peter Dale Scott, who you can see in my film Invisible Empire, who talked about things called parapolitics and deep politics and the deep state. And he is one of the most brilliant surviving academics of our time, and he has given zero credit. Probably because about 95% of what he's talked about over the last 60-plus years has come to fruition.
Yeah, it's insane. And the thing is that there's so many of these stories. I mean, I remember just throughout the years, remember when the Penn State thing happened, there was that guy, Ray Grickard. He was like an attorney general, he was an attorney, district attorney who disappeared. Supposedly had like all this stuff on a hard drive that he was investigating the Penn State scandal. He ends up going missing. They find his laptop with no hard drive.
I remember.
Yeah. And it was, you know, all, and then you know, obviously the Franklin scandal, I've had Nick Bryan on, and Open Secret on, you know, the documentary about Hollywood. I mean, all this stuff, you know, Matthew Valenta, or he was on, he was one of the producers for that film. I mean, this stuff has been going on forever, and so many people have talked about it. And I think there's definitely something positive about the fact that now something is, because I think a lot of these things, I mean, like you said, like if you have kids in your life, if you have a mother, whatever, these things hit home, because it's bothersome. And even some of the podcasts I've done, when I talked to Nick Bryan for an hour about the Franklin scandal, and then when I talked to, Matthew about Open Secret, and you're doing an hour and a half, 2 hour conversation about pedophilia or human trafficking, it's fucking depressing, and nobody wants to talk about it. And even less people want to hear about it. And I think it's almost, you know, ignorance is bliss. It's easier to kind of move on with your life. But to me, much like yourself, I feel the need to have to spark these conversations and let people know this stuff is going on, because ignoring it obviously isn't going to change anything. And we need to find the energy and power and courage to talk about these things and let people know that, you know, and Sam Tripoli's said it before, and I've said it on this podcast, where it seems like the world's run by fucking pedophiles, and it's everywhere. And it's I don't know if remember that movie Hostel, back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it kind of reminds me of that. Like a bunch, I don't know if these people are initially molested themselves and kind of just kids with no chance, or I don't know if they're just sick, rich, powerful people who have literally driven every nice car, lived in every nice house, been on a vacation in every beautiful place, where they've run out of things that turn them on or that it's desirable, and they go to these weird fetishes. Or sometimes they're just sick people who happen to, you know, have a lot of resources so they can live these weird fetishes. Whatever it may be, it's definitely fucking scary. I know I watched that documentary, Missing 411. You ever watch that? It's about all the kids that go missing in state parks. And it's like some ridiculous, like, large amount of kids, and they have like no central database. They don't keep reports on this, so there's no way of even like investigating it if you could get a hint or so, a clue or whatnot. And this guy did this documentary, and he did a podcast with Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, and they had him on, and he, it's funny because they kept asking like, what do you think, and he wouldn't really speculate on anything, and he just said, this is what's going on and this is what I know. And he used to work for the state park, and that's what he found interesting, was like, well, and it's funny because I was thinking to myself watching that, knowing all this human trafficking, I'm like, wouldn't that be a great place to get some kids to traffic? I mean, it just like, you know, your brain goes there, and it sounds kind of crazy, but I'm like, at this point, I'm like you, like I'll entertain any theory, because there's so many things that if I didn't know were true or there wasn't hints of truth to, I would completely dismiss that, you know, after you find out all these stories are real, or and you constantly read these articles and unravel all these crazy stories, literally there's nothing that I wouldn't entertain.
You know what? Again, I try to have that discernment, but you look at Epstein's Island, he's got a giant temple, he has a huge occultic sundial from, like, looks like a giant tarot card. Everything pretty much is on the table. And, you know, just quickly to go back to your point that, you know, elite pedophiles seem to rule the world. Well, this one was published yesterday. I'm going to be doing an in-depth piece on it. Prince Charles' mentor was a homosexual with lust for young boys, FBI files say. Now, this is Lord Mountbatten, okay? And you look at this, and the word pedophile is not used one time, not once. Why is that? I don't understand. And the other thing that's really striking about this article, and other than Mountbatten is another member of the royal family, that predator class that doesn't seem to be able to be touched. If you look at Prince Andrew and his connections, they go even beyond the fact that he seems to be a pederast. He's the nation's arms dealer. You know, you want to cut back to that Khashoggi connection and Iran-Contra, Epstein knowing both. That's also very interesting. But Mountbatten himself, you know, mentoring Prince Charles being very close with Jimmy Savile, who was never brought down. You know, we learned about him after his death, even though there were tons of rumors as to what a monster he was. Not only a pederast, but somebody that was having sex with corpses in hospice, allegedly, during these reports. That's the kind of guy Prince Charles was not only endorsing, but thought about, according to reports, having be the godfather to one of his sons. So I think that's a great example of how these monsters think.
Well, you look at Dennis Hastert, you look at Anthony Weiner. I mean, these are stories, like, people don't even know, like, what these guys are linked to. Like, when this Epstein thing happened and I'm talking to people about this, I'm like, well, you know, I'm like, this isn't the first time people high up in politics or in the world are linked to this type of stuff. And you bring up people like Dennis Hastert, and you're like, wait, he was Speaker of the House? I know that name. They're like, yeah, do you know he was linked to molesting kids? And they're like, really? You know, you talk about the Anthony Weiner laptop and, you know, what some of the detectives or police have said about, you know, the stuff that are on there. And then all the mysterious suicide, you know, NYPD suicides. Well, you live in New York, so what do you think about that whole, for people who don't know, you know, a bunch of just coincidentally New York cops are killing themselves. Do you think it's just something that it is a couple coincidental guys that, the job, let's be honest, being a cop in New York would lead some mentally and emotionally weak people to suicide anyways, to some of the shit you have to deal with every day. Or do you think there's more to the story?
I'll say this, you know, I'm an upstate New York guy, and I was heavily covering the NXIVM thing, which is another one of these elite pedophile rings, let's be honest, with a Scientology twist that, you know, is connected to billionaires. But I'll say this about the cop thing. I went down to New York City for the first time in a while. I went there for New Year's, down to see the PFL finale, but I was in and out, Penn Station, into MSG, Penn Station, out. This time, actually, Fitch got me amazing seats. I was sitting next to Henzo Gracie and his family.
Oh, nice.
Oh, it was awesome. And when you get down there, man, it's a third world country. I hate to tell everybody that, but when you get into the heart of Manhattan, I don't know how it's even a thing. Yeah. And I've been down there since I was in the, you know, probably the 80s. I remember my first times in Manhattan and Brooklyn and all that stuff. My great aunt lived there on my father's side, and he would take us down. And I remember back then I was down in Dutchess County, so it was about 45 minutes till you got into like the Bronx area and start seeing, hey, we're coming into the city. A lot of people don't realize New York is a huge state. I live, if you watch my walk and talks, I'm in central New York. I live amongst trees and mountains, and the Catskills are around. It's gorgeous.
Where do you live?
In Oceana. So I'm a half hour from Cooperstown. So actually, okay, yeah. The gigs that I had after I left InfoWars was I headed up this Cooperstown Dreams Park, which is the largest stay-away camp with like 26-plus teams every week for Little Leaguers. And actually, my first ever job was in Cooperstown around the corner for the Hall of Fame doing print, and I used to work with them constantly. So, you know, big baseball, like country bumpkin type community, not what you're going to see down in the city. It's two different worlds.
It is.
When you're
yeah.
down there, just the probability for small level corruption, forget about Wiener and his laptop and all that other stuff. I mean, you look into the cases, and I cover them, of police officers dealing heroin, cocaine, running women, et cetera, et cetera.
The 7-5. You know,
they're pretty damn rampant. So you could have lower level hits. That whole Anthony Weiner thing makes me disgusted. It again shows that the predator class gets away with a lot more, right? He's already out of jail. He's investing in legalized marijuana companies, which is almost impossible in New York. First of all, even though with the recent decriminalization, all that other stuff, I want to explain to people, even to get a medical license here to distribute in this state, and it's not like this in Massachusetts or the surrounding areas, you got to have $10,000 that's non-refundable and $250,000 liquid cash. Now, if you get denied, they keep your $10,000, they give you back your $250,000. However, that's think about the entry-level fee. If you don't get denied, they take the entire thing of over $250,000 for a medical-level dispensary. It is not – you cannot sell to people – other than medical. That's how corrupt it is here. I don't even want to get into how corrupt my state has become under Cuomo, but it is pretty disturbing. And it's not like you didn't see this coming. I wasn't a fan of it under Giuliani. We saw a very big shift to authoritarianism after 9/11, period. And Giuliani was never the governor. That was Pataki, by the way. But you saw under that sense of fear that more and more restrictions came. In New York, some of the big binge drinking laws under Pataki, I mean, they were done. You were closing bars earlier. There was no more all you can drink. I ran a bar. It's extremely – you can't run a special of better than half price, a.k.a. BOGO. Nothing more than that in an establishment or it's illegal.
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, I live in Massachusetts, so I'm not super far from you. We do a lot of work in the Berkshires that borders, you know, Albany and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a different world. I remember, you know, I was born in Portugal, and I remember coming into America, and like New York City was always the pinnacle of America. It was always like you have to see New York City, and I know I'm going to lose probably a lot of New York listeners. I have family in Long Island. I have family in
a hell pit on the planet, one of the three hell pits. I'll say Los Angeles and Hollywood, I'll give as one hell pit. Long Island, I like New York City way better than as much shit as I just talked. I can hang out in the city for like a week. You give me 2 days in Long Island around those people, they are the world's worst people, other than people in Miami, the third hell pit in this country. I can verify as a terrible place. But continue.
Yeah, well, luckily, well, it's weird. Well, because we go to Jeffersonport, we go into Long Island, and it's
Jeff.
Yeah, it's and so my experience in Long, I haven't really spent much time in Long Island besides hanging out with the family. So my experiences with it are I guess probably not very, you know, are positive for those reasons. Yeah. But the city, I was definitely super disappointed. I didn't realize how fucking dirty the city was.
It's got a smell.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even, you know, I think New York City would have no problem not vaccinating their kids, and because their immune systems are strong enough if you're growing in there. If you're growing up in New York City, I'm sure you have a very strong immune system. I mean, my kids are unvaccinated, so, and they've been in New York City, so that shows that you can unvaccinate your kids and they survive in you know, that type of place. So it's, yeah, it is wild. But there is a, you know, I'm glad that there's, I was gonna get to the story about coming from Portugal or whatnot, but I'll forget that personal story. But to get back to what we were talking about, yeah, I'm glad this is shining light on all this stuff. I'm glad that there's people like yourself who are willing to constantly talk about it. I think some people kind of just look at it and they're like, oh, well, you know, like, well, why talk about it? You know, like, okay, we've, you know, it's almost like, you know, like Whitney Webb. she might be on, I think, later this week. And one thing I like about her is that she's really, everybody makes it like a Clinton Trump thing. They're just using it as a pawn to like, oh, let me just use him to bash whoever I don't like. And this has nothing to do with politics. This has nothing to do with any of this stuff. And everybody is linked to this guy. So when she goes deep, I mean, I've seen some heard some interviews with her, and it's like to the point where I have a hard time keeping up with all the links. I'm like, wow, she's just saying names and this person, that. And I'm like, well, how do you keep up with this? But it shows you behind the scenes, like the people who are really influencing things, the most evil of evil, aren't people we know. They're not the Trumps. They're not the Clintons. They're not, you know, there's stuff behind the scenes that, you know, even people like the Mercers, you know, they got some headline news because they gave money to the Trumps, but a lot of people didn't know who the Mercers were prior to Trump running, and they had huge influence. Look at the family. That documentary just came out on Netflix based on the book about the Christian group, the Fellowship or whatnot. You know, these are people, again, some people are like, holy shit, like these people have been influencing policy and politics forever, and I've never even heard of these people. But so I think that that's really important. Sometimes we can get, and one thing I like about yourself and I like about James and some of the researchers I really pay attention to is that you don't just focus on the headline news unless it's important, unless it's relevant. And because there's a lot of just shit that is clickbaity, and yeah, you can talk about every mass shooting, you can talk about every single thing that the headlines are talking about and get a lot of clicks, but it might not be as important as some of the other stories. And I like the fact that you focus on those stories.
Well, thank you, brother. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. And for those that don't know, I'm doing it 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times a day. I'm also releasing some of my archive stuff on my channel. So I released a little piece of a Jordan Maxwell interview, a Ted Gunderson interview, a speech from Ray McGovern recently. But like you said, dude, I try to hit all the really important subjects, whether it be biometrics, the Bilderberg Group, transhumanism, elite Hollywood level sexual abuse. Obviously, I'm, you know, at the forefront of the Epstein case. And then you can also take a look at my stuff on Nexium. I'm trying to hit it hard. I'm, you know, blessed to be able to now do this. We're in month 3 full time. I'm doing this 7 days a week. I think I've taken one day off in the last 2+ months, but even then I try to put something out. My dog's currently sick, got a terminal diagnosis. So, you know, I'll probably take a couple days off if something happens with that and put out some of the older stuff. But yeah, man, that's what it's all about. It's all about not being about left or right, but about right and wrong and having discernment and looking at the real issues that go on beyond this mainstream narrative that's largely directed by the media, military, industrial complex to this day, whether we're aware of that or not. And I hope that people check out my stuff. You know, I'd like to say that I remember you saying something about JFK. You've got to see my Secret of Camelot Revealed video. It's about an hour long, but it talks about the very real reality that Oswald, at the very least, looks to be FBI and a CIA agent at the time of the shooting of Kennedy, and a man that most people don't know about, Warren C. DeBru. We go into some really old documentary evidence and documents that suggest that there's a real nefarious thing around Oswald via the intelligence networks we talk about.
Is that on your YouTube channel?
It absolutely is on my YouTube channel. In fact, let's scroll down to it for the video viewers. Again, we do so many of these. Also at the forefront of that case where Linda Collins Smith, a state senator, was reported shot and killed. Then it came out that she was wrapped up in a blanket outside of her home and her body had been mutilated under a tarp and that she was investigating human trafficking. So, you know, I'm not done with that case. In fact, there's some new developments in there. I'm probably going to be doing a follow-up video. There it is. Is Warren C. DeBru the key to solving the Camelot mystery? It's an hour-long deep dive into these documents. So, again, other than just doing, you know, punditry-type work or interviews with people like Whitney Webb, I tell people, listen, you got to read so far 3 out of 4. She's got a fourth part coming out. It's going to take you 3.5 hours if you're being honest with yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
And go into JFK. We got the documents. You can find them, too. You can do your own digging. Everything I do is backed up live and in charge at 1080p on 2 different formats, both YouTube and via Periscope and Twitter. So I'm trying to get things done, brother.
So is most of your work going to be on your YouTube channel? Or have you thought about doing a podcast or releasing some of these videos in podcast form, or, you know, having an RSS feed where people could subscribe to it and listen to it in their car or whatnot?
I've told people this. What I really would like to do is find a way that I can get back on terrestrial radio for 2 hours a day, do four 15-minute segments, which obviously will have advertising, 3 4-minute spots, but so that it's insured, I'll have a 10 to 12-minute spot on each segment. I know that's not regular radio, but I'm sure we could work it out. And then that way everybody's got an advertiser, and I would have rights to my video, which I would live stream. That means every single day, say I did it 5 days a week, weekdays, 10 to noon, I'd have 8 videos done before noon. And then I could focus on other news and other things for the day and really pump it out. I think it would be mutually beneficial. At the end of the broadcast, obviously, you would take that, you would put it into podcast form and upload it. It'd be a win-win for everybody. So if there's any radio producers out there with an AM or an FM dial and they're looking somebody who can spit some truth and isn't going to take a partisan take, I'm your guy.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I mean, but do you think that, I mean, because the thing about doing a podcast, one of the things we love about it is the fact that we do have the green light to talk about what we want, at least for the time being. I know James Corbett recently has talked a lot about, we did a podcast on censorship, and soon afterwards, he kept getting notifications that from his listeners that, hey, I can't find the Fed documentary. I can't find this video or that video. So, you know, are you afraid of being on regular radio and then?
No. Listen, if they're going to ban me. I can curb my language, but I'm not going to curb my content. Yeah. And with that being said, Ricky, I
know you got to go. Yeah. Sorry. I just looked at the time.
I got another podcast with the Tinfoil Hat Crew, another great, you know.
Oh, tell Sam I said what's up.
Billboard Epstein. I thank you so much for having me on, brother.
Hey, thank you so much. And tell Sam I said what's up. And keep up the great work, Jason.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, take care. I believe.